Welcome to the Old Time Dragnet Show from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Give us a call, 208-991-4783, and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodragnet. Well, we begin now with a listener comment. Philip writes, "Awesome episode this week. Thanks for the weekly fix, Adam." You're welcome. And we're going to get into today's episode, which is brought to you by the financial support of our listeners. Thank you so much for all of your support. It is greatly appreciated. Well, today's episode is called The Big Lens.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a robbery detail. You get a call from the Georgia Street Hospital. A woman has been brought in to receive emergency treatment. She says she was kidnapped and robbed. Your job? Investigate.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Wednesday, February 4th. It was cool in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of robbery detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Chief of Detectives Thad Brown. My name's Friday. We're on our way out from the office, and it was 8:32 when we got to Georgia Street Hospital, the treatment room.
Dr. Hall?
Oh, hi, Frank. Be right with you. Excuse me.
Certainly, Doctor.
Hi.
Hi, Doctor.
That the Alston woman?
Yeah.
How is she?
Bruised about the face, not too serious. She can leave when you finish with her.
Good. Can we go in now?
Sure. Let me know when you're through with her.
All right. Thanks, Doc. Miss Alston?
Yeah?
We're police officers. This is Frank Smith. My name's Friday.
How you doing?
I do, ma'am.
Doctor just told us that you could return home when we finish questioning you, so we'll try not to keep you too long.
Thank you. I'm not really hurt much. I was more frightened than anything else.
Yes, ma'am. Would you like to tell us what happened now?
I stopped at a signal at Washington Boulevard in Normandy, and suddenly the car door opened, and a man jumped in the car. I was scared, and I let out a yell.
Mm-hmm. Which door did he open?
Well, on the passenger side. He got right in the front seat beside me.
All right.
He had a knife in his hand. He said not to scream or he'd stab me. Put the knife right against my ribs, right here.
Mm-hmm.
Then he said to drive straight ahead. I did. We went a couple of blocks, I guess it was, and then he said to stop the car. When I pulled over the curb, another man got in the car, in the back seat.
Mm-hmm.
The one with the knife told me to get in the back seat. And when I did, he gave the knife to the other man. Then he started to drive.
Mm-hmm.
And the man in the back took my purse from the front seat and started going through it. I don't know why I did, but I grabbed for it. That was a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
He slapped me real hard. He said that was just a sample. I'd get some more if I didn't just sit quiet. He took the money I had in my billfold and grabbed my arm and twisted it so I had a watch on. And I hesitated when he told me to take it off, and then he hit me again.
He took your watch, too, did he?
Yeah, and my ring, too.
Can you give us the serial number on the watch?
Yes, I have it written down at home.
We need a description of the ring, too.
All right.
Would you go on, please?
Sure, I'd wind up as a picture and a headline in tomorrow's paper, one way or the other.
How do you mean that?
Well, he was driving like a maniac. He's breaking all kinds of laws.
Yes, ma'am.
Then I thought, well, maybe this might be a good thing, his driving like that, I mean, because a police car started chasing us. I could hear the siren, and I thought I saw the red lights flashing.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping they'd catch us, but, well, somehow we got away from them. This man took so many chances and all. I wonder we didn't smash up sooner.
You mean that you did have an accident later on?
You don't know about that?
No.
Well, after he got away from the police car, this man kept driving real crazy and dangerous. Finally, we went down a dead-end street. He put on the brakes, but it was too late, and we smashed into a wall of some kind.
Yeah.
And they got out of the car, and they started running. I started screaming.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyhow, some man came out of a building. I told him what had happened, and he called the police and the ambulance. Here I am. Still some shaky, but thankful it wasn't any worse.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us a description of these two men?
Well, not much, I'm afraid. That makes me feel pretty stupid, too.
What do you mean, ma'am?
Well, I'm always doing those observation tests in magazines. I could get real high ratings, and when I'm up against the real thing, I fail miserably.
Can you give us a general idea of their age, their coloring, their height, the way they were dressed?
I don't think they were too old. Maybe around 20 or so.
Mm-hmm.
They had dark hair. I can't tell you how tall they were. The only time I saw them standing up was when they ran away from the car.
I see.
As I remember, the one that drove had on a sport coat, tan color. And the one in the back had on a brown suede jacket. You know, the kind with the knit cuffs and the collar and the waist. That's about all I can remember. I'm sorry.
That's all right, Miss Austin. We appreciate the fact you're under a pretty bad strain.
I really thought they'd kill me.
Yes, ma'am. Remember if they were clean shaven?
You mean that they have mustaches?
That's right.
No, they didn't.
Well, you remember if either of them had any scars or marks on their faces, anything distinguishing that might help us identify them later?
Well, if they did, I didn't see any, but... Well, there was one thing. I don't know if it means anything.
Yeah.
The one that was driving had a bandage on his thumb. I could see that because he held the steering wheel up near the top.
On which hand?
The right one. It was all wrapped up, you know, all around, not just adhesive kind.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry I can't give you more information. That didn't make me happier than for you to catch them. Especially the one that kept hitting me, the one in the back seat.
Yes, ma'am, I understand.
I think he enjoyed it. He'd grin when he did it, after I made the mistake of grabbing for my purse. I tried not to give him a reason to hit me again. It didn't help. He just hit me when he felt like it. No reason at all.
Really wouldn't have made any difference what you did, ma'am.
How do you mean, Mr. Friday?
Men like that.
Yeah?
They don't need a reason. We continued to question Gwen Alston, but she could add nothing further that would aid us in identifying the suspects. She did give us a description of the ring. She said she would call and give us the serial number of her watch. She couldn't tell us anything about the knife used to intimidate her other than the fact that it had a blade about 6 inches long. We asked her to come down to the city hall and check the mug books. Dr. Hall released the victim, and she returned home in the company of her brother. The radio unit that had answered the call had gotten out a local broadcast on the two suspects. They impounded the victim's car, and it had been moved to the official police garage. 9:37 p.m., Frank and I drove over to Wall Street. The crew from Leighton Prince had just finished going over the car.
Hi, Joe, Frank.
Hi, Harlan.
Harlan, how are you?
You fellas draw this one?
Yeah. You going to give us some help this time?
Yeah, just finishing doesn't look too good.
Yeah?
Got a couple of partials, nothing real clean.
Well, what we got from the victim, it looks like we got our work cut out for us on this.
What do you mean, Joe?
Well, all she could give us in the way of a description would fit any number of guys.
I see. Well, we got something out of the back seat that might be of some use to you.
What's that, Harlan?
I got it right here in an envelope. There you are, Joe.
What's this?
Well, that aluminum container has some corneal lenses in it.
What do you mean?
Eyeglasses. You know, the kind that fit right in the eye.
Oh.
Where'd you find them?
In the back seat, right on top of the cushion.
Well, it might be something. We'll have to check with the Alston woman, see if they belong to her or anybody in her family.
Yeah. What is this case, Joe?
Kidnapping robbery.
How many suspects?
Two.
One woman in the car?
Yeah.
Hurt her at all?
Yeah, beat her up a little.
Huh. Real he-man, huh? I sure wish I had more for you fellas to go on.
Yeah, Harlan, we don't have much, but at least we know something.
What's that, Joe?
When we reach these two,
yeah,
they won't give us any fight. We went back to the office and called Gwen Alston. She told us the corneal lenses found in her car did not belong to her or to any member of her immediate family. She also gave us the serial number on her watch. We took the container over to the crime lab. Ray Pinker said because of the facets on the lenses, he thought it was a type made by the Stimson Company. The next morning, we drove out to their shop. We talked to George Dudley. We showed him the lenses.
Yes, it's our lens. You can tell quite easily when you hold it up to the light. You see those little facets?
Mm-hmm.
Where is it?
Oh, yeah. Could you tell us who these were made for, Dudley?
I can give you the name of the optician.
Appreciate it if you could.
I'll have to check our files. It shouldn't take too long.
All right, sir.
Ordinarily, we'd have to check lens power, diameter, and radius curvature.
Yes, sir.
But this is a special type lens.
That's so?
It's used to correct the condition of the eye known as keratoconus.
What's that, sir?
The conical cornea.
Oh.
We don't make too many of them. Excuse me, I'll get the name of the optician for you.
All right, fine.
Pretty good deal, huh?
Yeah.
I know a fellow who wears them. Says he used to hate to get a haircut, but not anymore.
All right.
Yeah, with these glasses on his eyes, now he can get his hair cut and still read the magazines.
I found it for you.
That's good.
These are made for John L. Roberts.
Just a minute, sir. I'll have to write that down. Okay, go ahead, please.
John L. Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
439 Camden Drive, Beverly Hills.
Thank you, sir.
Got it?
Yes, sir.
This is the optician that sent in the prescription, huh?
That's right.
All right, fine. Thanks for your cooperation, Dudley.
Not at all. I always get a kick out of helping you, fellas.
Yes, sir.
A lot of steps to solve a crime, aren't there?
Quite a few, yeah.
Sure hope I've given you a little something.
You have.
A lot of steps.
Yes, sir. You helped us make the first one. We drove out to Beverly Hills and we talked to John L. Roberts. He checked the prescription number against his files and gave us the name and address of a Robert Brierton as the man he had fitted with the corneal lenses. Frank and I went over to the house on Bedford Street, but there was nobody home. We found out from a neighbor that Brierton worked for a coin machine repair company on Pico Boulevard. We located the concern, and the manager showed us where we could find the suspect. 10:13 a.m. Robert Brierton?
Hmm?
Is your name Robert Brierton?
Yeah.
Police officers. It's our identification.
Joe Friday?
That's right. It's Frank Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, how are you?
I'd like to ask you some questions.
What about?
Do you wear those glasses all the time?
Do I what?
The glasses you got on. Do you wear them for work?
Yeah, most of the time. What's this about glasses?
You ever wear any other kind?
Yeah, why?
What kind?
Well, how many kinds are there?
Why don't you tell us?
I don't get this. What am I supposed to have done?
You wear another kind of glasses? Isn't that what you said?
Yeah.
What kind?
The corneal lens type.
Where are they?
I don't know. Home, I guess.
You're not sure, huh?
Look, officers, I don't know what you're after, but if it's something that happened in the last 20 years, you got the wrong guy.
Well, if we have, then you got nothing to worry about, have you?
That's right, but a mistaken identity can be embarrassing. I'd just like to know what I'm supposed to have done.
Suppose you tell us about the other glasses, huh?
Your corneal lens?
Yeah.
Well, what do you want to know about them?
Like we said before, we want to know where they are.
Well, like I said, home.
You're sure?
Yeah.
How many pair do you have?
One.
You wear glasses all the time?
Yeah.
Can you see without them?
Yeah, but not too good.
Where were you night before last?
At home.
How about last night?
Same.
All night?
Right.
Can you prove it?
Yeah, my wife will tell you that. You can call her on the phone. She'll tell you I didn't leave the house.
All right. We'll go out there.
You can call her just as well.
We'd like to see your other glasses, too.
All right. You mind telling me what this is all about?
We're investigating a kidnapping and robbery.
You think I had something to do with it?
We're investigating.
Okay, if that's how it is, I've got nothing to hide. You want to go right now?
That's right.
My jacket's right here in the locker.
Wait a minute, I'll get it for you. This it?
Yeah, the brown suede with the knit trim.
We took Robert Brierton with us and we drove out to his home. On the way, he continued to deny any knowledge of the crime. Because the victim, Gwen Alston, had been unable to furnish us with much of a description of the suspects, it was difficult to determine whether or not Brierton was one of the men. He had dark hair. He was in his early 20s. The suede jacket he wore checked out. 11:07 a.m.
Anna? Anna? Guess she isn't here.
It's all right. We'll wait for her.
Now, I've been trying to make up my mind whether I should be mad or not. I know you're only doing what you have to, so I guess there's no need to get overheated, but I'll say it again. You got the wrong guy.
Well, if we're wrong, we'll admit it.
Just hope this doesn't put me in bad down at work.
No need for it, too, if you're innocent.
I suppose so. You want to sit down? I don't know just when my wife will get back.
If you don't mind, we'd like to see your other glasses now.
Oh, sure, I'll get them for you.
Where are they?
Well, I usually keep them on the bedroom dresser when I'm not using them.
All right, we'll go with you, all right?
Sure. Hope she made the bed. She's a pretty good housekeeper, but sometimes she gets a little sloppy about it.
Yeah.
I swear they were right here on the dresser.
Yeah.
I haven't had them too long. I switch off with these that I'm wearing.
Did you wear them yesterday?
Yeah, but then they should still be on the dresser. I don't know where they could be.
Maybe we can help you.
What do you mean?
Who's back there?
Anna?
What are you doing home?
Honey, these are police officers. This is my wife.
I do.
How you doing, ma'am?
What are they doing here?
We'd like to talk to you, Miss Bryden.
About what?
Now, don't worry, dear.
But what's it all about?
Would you like to step out in the other room, please?
It's all right, dear.
I don't understand this.
This will do. Can you tell us where your husband was Tuesday night?
He was home. With me.
How about last night?
He was here all evening.
You sure?
Yes, he came home from work and stayed in all evening.
Mm-hmm.
What is it?
Police business.
You think Robert had something to do with it?
Yes, we do.
When did this happen?
Last night.
I told you he was home all evening.
That may be true, but these corneal lenses were found in the victim's car.
They belong to Robert?
That's what his optician told us, yeah.
It's all wrong.
Well, the victim was beaten by a man who wore a jacket, brown suede with knit trim. That's the kind your husband owns, you know.
But he wasn't out of the house, I tell you.
I'm afraid we'll have to take him downtown.
No, he didn't do it. I know it.
I'm sorry, Miss Bryden. These are your husband's lenses. They were found in the victim's car.
But he was with me all evening.
That may be, but we're going to have to hold him.
No, he didn't do it. It was Gordon.
Gordon who?
I let him wear Robert's jacket last night.
Well, who's Gordon?
My brother.
You are listening to Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action.
Mrs. Briarton went on to explain that she let her younger brother take the suede jacket the previous night. She also told us that the boy was living with them while he attended school. After questioning her further, we learned that Gordon Hedig had been in trouble with the police before. We called the office and asked Jack Crowley to check the name and description through R&I. We also asked that if he came up with a record, he'd have Harlan Stahl compare Hedig's fingerprints with the partials found in the victim's car. Frank and I got the address of the school that the boy was attending, and we drove over to see him. We waited in a small office while the school authorities located him.
Well, Miss Austin was right about what she told us.
What do you mean?
Well, she said she couldn't give us a very accurate description.
Yeah.
She said the ages might be around 20 or so.
Mm-hmm.
Not many high school students look 20, not even seniors.
Yeah, that's true, but according to what the Briartons told us, this could be the boy.
Yeah, that's right.
Come in. Come on in, son. Close the door. You Gordon Hedig?
Yeah.
Police officers, Hedig.
Well, you want me to do standard attention?
I told you once to come on in. Now, come on over here.
Sure, but remember where you are. These ain't soundproof walls.
I don't play tough with us, son. Sit down there.
You see, orders always tell you guys what to do. Sit down, stand up. You're all the same. Never get off a guy's
back. All right,
back.
Now, just keep still.
Sitting in school trying to learn something. You got to come around and jerk me out of class. Why don't you wait until General Assembly to get the whole school in on it? I don't care what you do to a guy's reputation.
That's what you think, is it?
Yeah.
Now, listen, son, we never heard of you before today, but we're finding out fast. The way we got it, you've gone way out of your way to make your own record, and you didn't do it in the classroom. We've got a good reason to be here. If you're innocent, you won't have to worry about what anyone in this school thinks.
You don't sell me, mister.
We don't have to, son. If you're clean, it's like we never met you. But I'm going to put it right on the line for you. The way this thing shapes up right now, we think you already bought yourself another hunk of trouble.
Figures. I'm made before I go in.
That's where you're wrong, kid. Nobody's going to tag you with a bum beef. You give us the right answers, and like my partner said, we never met you.
All right. What do you want from me?
You can start by telling us what you did last night.
I went to a show.
Where?
Downtown.
What time?
Oh, around 7, I guess.
Who was with you?
Nobody. I went by myself.
What was the name of the theater?
The Dorn.
What'd you see?
What pictures?
Yeah.
I don't remember right off. One was a Western. It was about spies.
You're all by yourself.
I said so, didn't I?
What time did you get out of the show?
Around 10, I guess.
What'd you do then?
Went home.
What kind of clothes did you have on last night?
What do you mean?
What were you wearing?
Oh, jacket, sport shirt, usual stuff.
What kind of jacket?
Suede.
Belong to you?
No, my brother-in-law.
Mm-hmm. How'd you get out to Washington and Normandy?
To where?
Washington and Normandy.
I told you I was downtown. Say, what is this?
You tell us. You were in that car, weren't you?
What car?
The one you beat the woman in.
Ah, you're crazy.
Who was with you?
I told you I was alone. What more do you want?
The name of the person that was with you.
I don't know what you're trying to tag me with, but you're not going to make it this time. I told you I was at a show by myself. How do you think you can prove I wasn't?
We found the lenses you lost from the jacket pocket.
Boy, this gets wilder all the time. I was sitting in the show last night, that's it.
In other words, you don't want to tell us about it, is that it?
About the show.
All right, Hedick, you play it your way. It's going to take us a little longer, that's all.
Same old story. Don't make any difference what I say. You know I got a record, so I'm guilty. Don't make any difference. Either way, I'm the pigeon.
No, you're wrong. Not with us, Hedick.
Oh, come on. I just didn't fall off the Christmas tree.
There's only one way we want you.
Yeah?
If you're wrong. We took Gordon Hedick to the city hall for further questioning. We called Gwen Alston and asked her to come down and see if she could identify the suspect. Harlan Stahl said the suspect's fingerprints matched the partials found in the car, but there weren't enough points to build a case on. 2:47 p.m., Frank and I had the suspect brought to the squad room.
Why don't you give up? I ain't going to cop out to something I didn't do.
We don't expect you to, but we still want to know how a container with your brother-in-law's lenses could be found in the backseat of a victim's car. Now, they were in his jacket, and you wore that jacket, isn't that right?
Don't ask me. I was at the show.
Yeah, so you said.
Another thing, you guys better treat me pretty good while I'm in here.
Yeah?
Sure. I'm a kid. Don't forget.
Yeah, that's the way it reads on the books. For my money, that's as far as it goes. I told you once, we can put you in the backseat of that car. I get it. Robbery Friday. Right. Send her down, will you? Right away. Thank you. I'm going to tag the business office. I'll be right back.
Okay, John.
Miss Alston?
Hello, Sergeant Friday. I got down as soon as I could.
All right, fine.
Have you got the man here?
Well, we'd like you to tell us. We'll go down the hall here.
Well, what do I have to do?
Just look into this room. Tell me if you see the man that beat you up.
Will I have to face him?
No. We'll go around here. You can look through the door. Come on.
All right.
All right, here.
Uh-huh.
Now, do you see him? Well, what about it?
Yes. That's him there.
We confronted Gordon Hedick with the fact that he'd been positively identified by the person he had beaten and robbed. He still refused to admit any knowledge of the crime. We booked him on Section 700 Sub M, robbery. A check was made of the FI cards in an attempt to identify the person who'd been with Hedick the night before. We called Newton, University, and 77th Street Divisions. When we checked with Central, a clerk went through the files and found that the suspect had been stopped at 9th and Main Streets at 10 p.m. the previous night. Frank and I went over to the 1st Street Station.
Is the FI card you wanted, Sergeant?
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Well, here's what we're looking for.
Yeah?
Wasn't alone. A person by the name of John Burkle was with him.
Officer make a card on him, too?
Yeah, I got it here.
What about the other guy?
Thank you. John Burkle, B-E-R-K-O, age 19, 506 Old Avenue.
Yeah.
Something else in the back here that checks out.
What's that?
Notation the officer made.
Yeah.
Burko's right thumb was bandaged. We went back to the office and ran the name John Burko through R&I. We found a package for him that showed several arrests as a juvenile and one as an adult for suspicion of ADW. Gwen Alston was shown his mugshot and she identified him as the other suspect. We drove out to his address on Holt Street. It was a boarding house. The owner admitted us to his room. We waited. 4 hours went by. 8:19 p.m. All right, Burko, hold it right there.
What?
Police officers, get your hands over your head. Come on, move.
Sure.
Over the door.
Come on.
Hands up on the door. All right, now hold it right there.
All right. Okay.
He's clean, Joe.
What's the pitch?
Come on, turn around. Put your hands behind your back.
All right. Hey, take it easy with my thumb. I think I got blood poisoning.
Yeah.
Now, you want to tell me what this is about?
A friend of yours sent us over to get you. Says you always work together on everything. It's kind of lonesome without you.
Who are you talking about?
Hedick.
He sent you here. He copped out to you?
All right, let's go.
What did he say?
You figured. We're here.
I think. Big talk about how you'd never cop out to anything. Never admit nothing. You know, that's the way it is when you get mixed up with young squirts.
All right, let's go.
Lousy punk. Suppose you know how he beat up that woman.
Yep.
Should have heard him afterwards, laughing about how he hit her. Should have figured he'd cop out if he got nailed. No guts. Got to beat up on women. No guts at all.
Well, that's real funny, isn't it?
What's that?
We just talked to him.
Yeah?
He said the same things about you.
The story you have just heard is true. The names were changed to protect the innocent. On June 9th, trial was held in Department 97, Superior Court of the State of California, in and for the County of Los Angeles. A petition was filed on Gordon Hedig, alleging one count of robbery and kidnapping. He was declared unfit as a juvenile and ordered to be tried in Superior Court. Gordon Jerome Hedig and John Carlton Burkle were tried and convicted of robbery in the first degree, one count, and kidnapping for the purpose of robbery. Robbery in the first degree is punishable by imprisonment for a period of not less than 5 years. Kidnapping for the purpose of robbery with bodily harm is punishable by imprisonment in the state penitentiary for life without possibility of parole.
Dragnet, the story of your police force in action, is a presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
Welcome back. Another episode where Friday works in another piece of evidence that police use. And in this case, of course, it's corrective lenses, which they do a good job of showing are very important identifiers because of how individualized the prescriptions are. And they took some pains to do that when the gentleman at the lens place, you know, threw in what they would normally do in the case of analyzing where a lens would come from in terms of taking the measurements. This episode also provides a little bit of compare and contrast with last week's episode. In both episodes, you had somebody who was incorrectly under suspicion by the police. Last week, we had the husband who was very belligerent. In this case, we have somebody who was not too happy about it, but a little more calmer, and things did seem to go better for him, which may be a clue of some sort in terms of something that's being encouraged in dealing with law enforcement. Well, we do turn, we got a lot of listener comments and feedback. First, we begin a question from Robert on iTunes. Says, greetings, Adam. I have a question regarding the big dog. I wanted to know if the poem that the gentleman read was something that maybe I could find in a book. Thank you for bringing Dragnet to life and keep the podcast coming. Well, thanks so much. In answer to the question, it does appear to be in print with the 25 Selected Stories by O.O. McIntyre. It's available on Amazon.com for $14.99 new. And you can also put in an interlibrary loan request. If you're one of our friends on Facebook, I went ahead and I posted the script. And while it does have some deletion marks there, apparently there was some debate about which parts of the poem to include. So you maybe get a little longer version there. Received a comment from Elliot who says, it sounds like the music regarding Steel Club Helen Corday from March that we played back in March 2007. That was like the fourth episodes. It sounds like the music teacher was played by Hans Conried. By the way, thanks for putting Dragnet on the web. Very possible. Conried was a very talented voice actor on a lot of shows, including Man Called X early on, and of course Life with Luigi, and just a wide variety of different programs, so he definitely could have done that. Then I received a couple of emails from Harry, who said, I just about listened to all the back Dragnets, and often you mention Friday living his mother with question mark. I think it should be noted that older women at the time did not work, and often the 50s did not receive Social Security, and often had to do with a small survivor's benefit, if anything at all. In that era and earlier, the eldest son, or only son, was expected to provide for his widow mother by the culture of the time. While it's not stated, I expect that Friday's salary provided for both of them. I do understand why Friday was single in the 60s Dragnet, which I found strange at the time, not knowing about the 50s Dragnet. And he said that he followed up information from his father, says in the 50s, even if a person was entitled to Social Security benefits, they would not always take them, seeing the monies as charity. Police officers, in my experience, are proud individuals. You know, that is a good point. And it is. It's perhaps a kind of a transformation that's happened in society in recent years in terms of how we view something at staying at home. You know, in the 21st century, a guy who's, approaching 30 and, living with his mother, we kind of go get some, Snickers, what have you. But I see that, for the reasons you list, it definitely made a whole lot of sense back in the 1940s and 50s. All right, well, that will actually do it for today. We will be back next week with another episode of Dragnet. In the meanwhile, send your comments to Box 13 at GreatDetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives. Give us a call, 208-991-4783. Andrew Rhines edits our sounds. OTRWesterns.com is his website, and Ken Curlin does the opening theme, KenCurlin.com. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.